Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Sanjay Torre, another episode of Office Evolution Radio, and this is going to be a fun one because we got a full house today, Sanjay.
I'm super excited.
All right, let's kick it off with Todd Weeks with Traction Focus. Welcome, Todd.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Well, Todd, before we get too far into things, tell us about Traction Focused. How are you serving folks?
Yeah, so Traction Focused, I help business owners get what they want from their business, and I do that by helping them implement a holistic business management operating system called EOS.
And what's that stand for?
Stands for the Entrepreneurial Operating System.
And EOS is something you developed, or is this...
No, I can't take credit for it. I wish I could, but it's actually been around for almost 20 years now. And I learned it kind of through using it in my last business. And now I'm helping other companies and clients experience that same transformation that my business experienced through EOS.
So tell me about that business. What were you doing and how did this help?
Yeah, so that business was a 27-year-old print and promotional company. And I was hired by the owner to come in shortly after they more than doubled the company through an acquisition. And we had went from about 10 to 12 employees for the first 27 years to over 37 employees through that acquisition in six different states. And so as you can imagine, that much rapid growth really brought a whole new level of complexity and challenges. And so shortly after I started, we were introduced to EOS. And it really resonated with us, and so we decided to jump right in and start using it and used a professional like myself to help us learn that. And really just within the first couple of years, we experienced significant transformation, really aligning all of our people around a common vision of where we were going, how we were going to get there, using the tools that we teach to really instill discipline, clarity around what each employee's role is, what they needed to do, what success looked like, and all within building a healthy culture.
Now, are there some kind of tenets or foundational information about EOS that is core to doing EOS properly?
Yeah, absolutely. So really, we always say we kind of focus on three things. We call vision, traction, and healthy. And so we help business owners and leaders clarify their vision, get clarity around where they're going as a company and how they're going to get there. And then we bring in tools to instill discipline and accountability and just really generate a culture of accountability using our tools, which ultimately results in them getting traction towards achieving that vision. And the third kind of leg of that stool we call healthy. And so it's using our tools and concepts to build a healthy, thriving culture.
Now, do you see when you're working with companies, that do they make the same mistakes or their mistakes kind of fall into one of those buckets?
Yeah, I would say generally they, you know, there is some consistency there. You know, when I talk to a business owner, I always say, or anyone I talk to, I always say, you know, every company has an operating system, a way of doing their, you know, doing business. And normally it's whatever the owner thinks. It's in the owner's head or the leadership team's head. And so through this proven system, we kind of pull that vision out of the owner's head and get it on paper, use our tools to really bring clarity around that, and then unite the entire company around achieving that vision so everyone's rowing in the same direction.
Now, if initially it starts out in the owner's head, how about if the owner is doing some stuff wrong or has some bias or isn't kind of thinking holistically enough?
Sure.
Does this come in and fill in some of the gaps?
Absolutely, absolutely. So it really kind of brings it all together. And at the end of the day, I say, you know, it's still your business. This is your vision. And how much more powerful if we could get that vision, that kind of preferred future state of where you want to take this company, how much more powerful would it be if we could extract that and really communicate that in a very clear level to all of your employees.
Now, when you're working with companies, do you find that more people are good at certain aspects? Like, do you see more people that are good at a vision but not good at executing? Or are they better at, or more people good at executing and less of having a big enough vision?
Yeah. So it's probably the former. So mainly, you know, I work with a lot of entrepreneurial companies where the owners are typically visionaries. So they have a lot of great ideas, right? And a lot of them have been in business for a while. They have a good business, but they want a great business. So generally, we kind of take those visionaries and capture that and kind of give them a blueprint that they can follow to help them really achieve that vision with just kind of simple steps and tools to help them and their teams execute on that vision.
Now, when you're working with a company, are you coming in and just telling them, hey, this is how you should do things, here's the roadmap, or are you actually kind of rolling up your sleeves and saying, you know, I'm going to get in there and I'm going to help you?
Right. Yeah. So I'm, you know, I always say I'm really three things: teacher, facilitator, and coach. And so I teach them the EOS system, what it is, what the tools are, how it works. I facilitate them through full day leadership team sessions. So that's kind of how I teach them, is facilitating them through these learning days. And then I coach them through the process. So in between meetings, I'm on the phone with them, sometimes in their office. But my goal is not to come in and tell them what to do or how to do it. I'm just trying to teach them a proven system and methodology to really help them run a better business.
So if in part of your conversation with them in the learning, you say, okay, you have to make 100 sales calls a week or somebody has to do that, you're never going to be the one doing that. You're just giving them the information.
Correct.
That now you
right.
have to figure out a plan.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even go to the level of telling them how many they should do. What we believe in EOS and what we teach is that the answer is in the room, because I'm not an expert in their business. They know their business better than I do. But I'm going to give them tools and help facilitate them to the answer of, if we have a sales issue or if we have a kind of a gap in sales, what do we need to do? We try to get to the root of the issue and always say, if I believe the answer is in the room. So if we can be open and honest with each other, I'm going to try to facilitate us to the right answer. And so they would actually come up with, here's what we need to do and here's what, you know, how we need to do it. And there's so much more power in that than just me coming in and telling them exactly what they should do. It's a discovery, and then it's so much more powerful.
Now, how long does it take for EOS to, so you know that it's working?
I would say, you know, you can see, start to see some subtle changes, and really depending on the company, even some pretty major changes in the first couple of months. But really within the first 12 to 18 months, they're going to start seeing results, not only from a bottom line perspective, but, you know, even after the first session together, I've had teams tell me, you know, we haven't discussed this many issues or had this good communication in months or years. And so it kind of gets everything on the table. And again, it's a proven way of doing things. So it's not their way or even my way. That's a proven methodology.
Now, when you were kind of transitioning out of your old job into EOS land, what was the thinking there? How come you didn't say, you know what, I'm going to just do this on my own. I've been doing business for a while. I know some stuff. Why don't I just, you know, have the Todd way of doing things?
Yeah, you know, that was actually, as I was talking with the owner of the business that I ran, where we used EOS to grow. In about 3 years, we grew our net profit 6 times and just had incredible results. Ended up selling that business, resulting in about a 40% increase in value. And what we loved about it wasn't Todd's way of doing business or Gary's way of doing business. It was a proven way of doing business. There's now over 6,000 companies around the world using EOS to run their business. And so, you know, I'm a big believer in don't reinvent the wheel. Let's stick with what works. And I just know this stuff works. And so that's why I'm so passionate about really challenging my clients to get everything they can out of it, because I really believe they're going to be able to achieve what it is they want if they follow this system.
Now, does EOS work for all kinds of companies and industries, or is it better suited for professional services or manufacturing or technology?
Yeah, that's a great question. So really our sweet spot are working with entrepreneurial companies where they have at least 10 employees. We say 10 to 250 employees. I do have clients that have less than 10, but it really works 10 to 250 employees. There's more complexity with more employees, tend to need a little more structure with that. And I always say EOS is industry agnostic. So I have about a dozen clients I'm working with right now. None of them are in the same industry. So manufacturing, distribution, technology, wealth management. So it really works for any entrepreneurial company where they want to grow and they're open to change.
Now, what's the pain they're having where EOS should, you know, the folks at EOS should be called?
Sure. So the number one pain generally is they're frustrated. They're not getting what they want from their business. A lot of times it comes down to people. That's the number one, I would say, not issue, but one of the areas where, you know, I have a hard time getting the right people, finding the right people, managing people. And so EOS really helps them clarify in an objective way, what does it mean to have great people for our unique company? So we help make that very tangible. And then we give them tools to better manage those people and drive clarity and accountability.
So now how do people kind of find you? How do they know that your consultancy even exists?
Sure. So a lot of it is definitely word of mouth, referrals. You know, I tend to do a lot of speaking engagements, different conferences and things like that.
What are some of the conferences you've spoken at?
Yeah, so the Print Services Association, which was one of the industries that I came out of, different clients that sponsor conferences, whether one of my friends has a tech company and going to be speaking at his conference in a couple of weeks, lunch and learns, just anywhere that people want to help business owners and give them tangible tools to really run a better business.
And then what's your talk about?
So generally, I always say I want to give you 2 to 3 or more tools that you can leave with today that will really help you run a better business. It could be around helping you clarify your vision, setting good goals, learning our tools around how to manage people better, how to use data to make good objective decisions. So there's just a handful of things. I try to really just, you know, kind of give it away. One of our core values is help first. And so it's all about helping business owners. And I really believe in, you reap what you sow. So if you help others, then it'll come back to you at some point. And again, I just love what I do, and I love helping business owners get what they want from their business.
Now, do you have any advice or any low-hanging fruit for most businesses if they can do one thing right now? Is there something that they're missing?
Yeah, I would say one of the things that comes to mind is if you can just give clarity to your employees on where you're going as a company and what their role is in that, what you need them to do, then people thrive where there's clarity, right? So I always like the analogy. If I ask you, Lee, to come on a road trip with me, what's the first question you're probably going to ask me?
Is there snacks?
All right, so maybe the second question.
Where are we going?
Where are we going? So I always say, you know, don't you think your employees want to know where you're going as a business? And then they want to know, well, what do you want me to do on that road trip?
And if somebody wanted to learn more and have a more substantive conversation with you,
sure.
What's the best coordinates?
Yeah, they can go to tractionfocused.com and send me an email. My number's on my website as well, and would love to have a conversation with anyone who's interested.
And that's the first step is a conversation, and then?
Absolutely, yep. And I want to understand what their frustrations are, what they want from their business that they're not getting, and see if EOS would be a good fit for them.
And then there's no fee for the first
Absolutely no fee. Absolutely no fee.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Great. Thanks for having me.
All right. Next up on Office Evolution Radio, Mr. David Dorier with Present Your Way to Success. Welcome.
Yes. Thank you. Good morning.
Did you learn anything there? How's your operating system of your organization?
Well, I think I could use an operating system, but there's only me, just the one, so I'm under the 6 employees.
So tell us what you're up to, David.
Well, Present Your Way to Success is helping to create champion speakers. I work with facilitators, trainers, speakers to help them understand how to best connect with their audience.
So do you see this as a problem?
I do, and a lot of people tell me that that's a problem. People say that I've conducted a training class, I was not able to control my class, things got, I was not able to stay with my agenda. How can I fix that?
So controlling your the group you're talking to, that's the terminology? You don't want to entertain or to inform?
Well, this is what people are telling me, that they need to control their audience, or they need to captivate their audience.
So that's the language they're using. So are you on board with that kind of language?
Well, I like to change that language to, how do I engage my audience?
How do I
leave an impression with my audience? How do I come across to my audience as being professional?
So now, this type of speaking, it's becoming more and more important nowadays, right? This the ability to communicate effectively and clearly. And then a lot of young people are using technology where they're trying to communicate in the, you know, in the minimal way possible.
Exactly.
Is there a kind of a disconnect now?
Well, that's a great question. I would say that still the number one way to communicate to your audience is going to be face-to-face or over the phone. Yes, there is a lot of ways that we can communicate through Facebook and through technology, but for me to make an impression on my audience, I need an emotional connection with them. Yeah, I can make that emotional connection through a video. I can make that emotional connection through the ad that I have. But being up in front of an audience and making that emotional connection, that's what I'm helping.
Now, is your work primarily with people who are public speakers, or are you going into organizations and working with trainers? Like, who is the person that you're educating?
My work primarily has been with working with organizations with that has a training organization. A lot of times what happens with trainers, someone is the subject matter expert, they've built the product, they built the EOS system, so who better to put up in front of the customer than Bubba, who built the system?
Right.
And a lot of times that's not the best option, because the customer may only need to know one or two things to be successful, and the developer of the product goes in there telling the customer everything there is to know, and just not understanding the basics of facilitation. How do I connect with my audience? How do I come across being professional?
So what are some of the basics of facilitation?
Basics of facilitation. One, there's three things that I teach. One is the ABCs of speaking. The basic foundational skills, understanding your agenda, believing that you're going to do a good job, and then the five core communication skills, using my eyes properly, listening, using vocal variety. Those are all the basics, understanding that. The other is to conduct an engaging presentation, I need to use the 70-30 rule. 70% of the time, my participants need to be not only engaged, but also participating. They need to be problem solving. I need to put them in small groups. A question and answer. So 70% of the time they're talking, 30% of the time I'm talking. The third piece is understanding the adult learning theory, or how the principles of engagement. There are eight principles to that. So those are the three pieces: the ABCs, the 70-30 rule, and then the principles of engagement.
So adults learn differently than children?
I would say that children and adults learn similarly. However, adults are extremely distracted. They also want to get their hands on it immediately. Sitting in front of someone who's just lecturing to them is not going to be impactful. The other thing is, adults are looking for, how is this relevant to me? Why should I care? How does this learning this new product or this new process or this new service going to benefit me or help me with my job?
So now, how do you differentiate yourself in kind of a sea of people that teach similar activities?
Well, there's definitely a sea of people out there with similar activities. I would say that the way that I differentiate myself is that, number one, I'm a great listener. I give great feedback. I've been a part of Toastmasters for years, and I have also won some championships in giving feedback or giving constructive feedback. So that's certainly one way. I've lived this now for almost 25 years. I've been a facilitator. I've been an instructional designer for 25 years. I created this course because of a need within the corporation that I was working with about 10 years ago. We had IT folks and trainers. Again, people that were in these positions are IT folks that are now trainers that needed to understand how to control a classroom or to how to facilitate. And I fell in love with this. I fell in love with this type of training. And I'm also just focusing on facilitation skills. I think the other thing that differentiates me from other presentation skill coaches is that many of them try to do everything. I'm a leadership coach. I'm a life coach. I'm a presentation skills coach. Here, I'm just doing presentation skills and facilitation skills.
Now, do you believe that anybody could do this, or are certain people just more predisposed to the skills needed to be an engaging speaker?
I think anybody can do it. I think as long as you understand the principles of interaction, understand how do I properly use my body, the ABCs of presenting in public, and also understanding the 70-30 rule, anybody can do this.
So introvert, extrovert, you don't...
I'm an introvert. I've been in positions or in careers that have put me up in front of people. I like being on stage. I don't care for small talk as much, but I consider myself to be an introvert. Most actors are going to tell you that they're introverts and love being somebody else. And in a way, I'm doing that as well.
Now, what about the audience where people learn in different ways? How do you kind of tap into each one of their kind of way that they like to absorb information when it's a group setting?
Well, that's one of the things that as a seasoned facilitator, one of the things that you have to learn is how to read your audience. In an audience, you're going to have different people. Everybody is going to learn differently. So what I have to do is, number one, I have to gauge that. I have to understand the type of audience that's in front of me, and I have to find a middle ground. So if I have people that are extremely quiet, I have another group of people that are very vocal, ask a lot of questions, maybe they're experts already in this process. I have to find a happy medium for that. And the only way to do that is practice, practice, practice. I have to learn the different learning styles.
And then in your mind, there's a difference between a trainer and a facilitator?
There are many, many similarities, but I would say that the difference between a trainer, I like to use the word facilitator versus trainer. When I go into the classroom, I like to see myself as facilitating them through the process. I want them, the audience, to find the problems, discover the problems, discover the ahas. That's, to me, facilitating. Also, these same principles can be used for a manager who's facilitating a meeting. How do I make sure that everybody in the meeting is contributing? How do I give feedback to the folks that are contributing? So facilitation can be used in a classroom. It can be used in a meeting. It can be used in many different ways.
Now, in your work, do you have a story you can share of maybe working with a group and making a big impact or having the group kind of resonate with your material in a way that surprised you or inspired you?
I find that every time. I find that one of the things, and if you were to ask any trainer what is the thing that they love so much, or facilitator, what is the thing that they love so much, it's that aha factor. It's when the audience gets it. It's when maybe even if I've had some problem folks that are in the room, but then they get it. One example of that was I was training a software product a number of years ago. Folks were moving from a paper-based expense report to an online expense report, and there was a lot of resistance to it. But I was, as a facilitator, I have to show the value. Once I was able to show the value of moving from paper-based to this online system, I had my audience.
Now, in your work, though, when you're giving a talk or facilitating a group, how do you know that it worked until after, if there was a change of behavior or some result occurred? Because in the room, it could be like, oh, this was fantastic. I loved every minute of it. You were hilarious. I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. And then if they don't change their behavior or do the whatever the objective was, then did it really work, or did it just feel good at that moment?
That's a great question. So there's definitely two pieces with what you're talking about. Number one, I have to have the impact in the room. I have to be able to deliver whatever my agenda is, and I need to assess in the classroom whether the person got it or not. Now, the second piece of that is the sustainability. Some of that could be my responsibility, depending on my role. Will I be coming back? Will there be some sort of an evaluation later on? Or in most cases, a lot of it falls back onto the leadership or to the managers. managers have to be a part of this process as well. Here are the new skills that are being taught. These are the things that you need to be looking for going forward after people leave this class. So that sustainability could fall on me partly, but then, you know, there's definitely an additional expense for additional time. I can do that. But what I like to do is have more of leadership and management monitor that.
But it's when you're working with a company, aren't you kind of, you're part of the team in order to achieve an objective, right? So part of it might be you giving a presentation, but the objective of the organization might be to have some behavior change or some activity to do better or new, learn something new. When you're selling this into them, are you saying, look, I can go in there and I can get everybody to nod their head and they'll give me the best smiley faces at the end of this and we'll all high five that it was a great job. But if the behavior doesn't change or we're not kind of communicating whatever we're trying to teach them over time, then it's kind of a Band-Aid on a bigger situation. So how involved do you get in kind of the holistic view of what you're trying to accomplish as an organization?
Again, great question. What I would try to establish up front is the accountability piece that, yes, I can come in here. I've got the great handouts. I can get people laughing and engaging with them in the classroom. However, if there's no accountability, once they leave here, then you're going to go right back to the old processes.
Right. So then you are talking strategically at that level with leadership in order to kind of make whatever outcome they desire happen.
Exactly, because I can give them horror stories of training that I've conducted in the past, doing leadership training in an organization. Leaders were not using these skill sets that were being taught. People were coming to class, and the first thing that they're saying is, my manager doesn't use these principles. Why should I? I'm here for the lunch.
Exactly. But that's one of the traps where people think that I'm going to hire a facilitator, and that's going to solve a problem. But if you don't have kind of a holistic system in place, right, it's not going to be very effective over time.
Exactly.
Now, before we wrap, I'd like to take your take on PowerPoint.
PowerPoint. Well, it's got pros and cons. I like having a visual to go, if it's appropriate, because people learn differently. Having a visual behind me to reinforce what I'm saying is great. However, not using PowerPoint as my script and having every single word and me just looking at it and reading from it, that's definitely a no-no. However, I like the idea of reinforcing what I'm talking about with a visual.
So a visual doesn't have to be words.
It doesn't have to be words. No,
right.
Great. It doesn't have to be words. It can be an image of some sort. Talking about the fear of public speaking and just having a woman or a man just screaming up on the screen, that type of image on the screen to depict being scared.
Right, and that could lock in the emotion of what you're trying to say, and maybe they'll remember it.
Exactly, and that's the key. Good stuff. That's the key, is the engagement piece is all about interaction with your audience and also making an impression and making it memorable.
Well, if somebody wanted to take their presentation skills to the next level, how can they get a hold of you?
Presentyourwaytosuccess.com.
Well, David, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you.
All right, hang with us. Got one more guest. The doctor's in the house now. Now we're going to all get better. Welcome to Office Evolution Radio, Dr. Ben Colton.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I noticed how everybody starts slumping up.
Fixing
your posture as soon as you guys started to see me come up and start talking, so I appreciate it.
So tell us about your work. Love the spine. How are you helping folks?
Yeah, so I am a doctor of chiropractic, and my background was in brain-based exercise. So chiropractic, to keep simply, is basically the assessment of the spine. And the reason that that's so important is that there's one organ in our body that controls every single thing that we do. So I was giving a health talk.
What's that organ?
What would you think it is?
Your brain?
The brain, absolutely. The funny thing is that most people might say the heart. So I was giving a health talk at one of the nursing homes. I don't know if that's because they were scared and they're most worried about their heart at that age. But they said the heart. And I said, well, how does the heart get its, you know, basic function? So as we're all sitting here and as we're all talking, you have all of these functions that are happening in the background. The brain is the control center, the master control center. What we know is that the brain is going to send signals throughout the day down the spinal cord. It's going to send it to your hands as I'm talking. It's controlling all my motor functions, my coordination, my balance. And what I have patients do, the first thing I have them do is I basically have them draw a C with their hand. And I said, this is basically the structure of your spine. So when an architect is building a bridge, they want to make sure that's well supported and it has a good foundation. If not, the bridge is going to collapse or fall, shift. Same thing with a house. You want to make sure that the foundation is kept in a good alignment. So the palm of your hand is going to represent your spinal cord and the nerves. So if that curve starts to essentially flatten, what happens to the palm of your hand?
It gets smooth and flat?
Yeah. Well, actually it becomes tense.
Tense.
Right. So normal curve would be a C. Mm-hmm. And then as I extend it, there's more tension buildup. And so from a general function standpoint, humans and animals can handle acute stress for a short amount of time. The problem is that if you're in a chronic condition where your spine starts to actually shift in certain positions and builds up pressure, will it now affect the nerves that are controlling every single function of your body? And the answer is yes, because what we know is that the brain doesn't want interference and the nervous system doesn't want interference. It doesn't want to live in chronic stress states. So the interesting thing is that when an animal gets chased in the wild by maybe a lion, right? It creates a stress response for a short amount of time and it will run away. But after 15 minutes, it goes back to grazing, right? And forgets that the thing ever happened. Humans, for some reason, have this great tendency to always be in a stressed out state. You wake up in the morning, you do your job that you don't like, and you go to work and you sit in that posture. And that's what everybody comes to me. They come as, well, I just sit at my desk all day. And as a chiropractor, it's actually a very, very more complex issue. And what I believe is that everybody deserves an individual approach to their health. So what I can tell you is that symptoms sometimes don't match up with the area of complaint. Somebody can tell me that they have low back pain, but they actually have a nutritional issue. Somebody might have numbness and tingling into the hands. You might think that it's coming from the hands, but when you actually look at the curvature at the base of the neck, it's starting to shift. So again, that's where I try to help people educate, and that's part of my job is really just the educational portion of everything that I do.
So now, what's the reason people typically come to you? Because they are having some physical pain at their back or neck?
Yeah, so the biggest thing is pain, and the biggest reason that people have pain is because they're just old. I mean, that's what they tell me. That's what everybody tells me, to be honest.
So when you're old, you have to be in pain?
Well, that's what, I shift it. I say, the older you get, the better you should move. The older you get, the better you should balance. They're all skills. So as a joke, everybody just tells me, they usually tell me three things. One, they forget to tell me a very important part of their health history. The second thing is that I'm just old and, I've been to everybody else and nobody can kind of figure out what's going on. So part of the pain education process is really just understanding that the body can handle stress, but it can handle short-term amount of stress. If you are, how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
56.
Okay, so you just entered the third quarter. I say everybody's going to live.
Third quarter? Really? I thought I was near the finish line.
Okay, well, I don't want that for you. So if everybody is planning to live to 100, let's just say that, you still got half of a game to play, right?
Right, I'm only six in the last 50.
You're only in six, exactly. And so some people come to me and they've never been adjusted before. And to me, that's a lot of pressure buildup over time, and that could potentially manifest into symptoms. So here's the thing.
You believe that people should get adjusted just as kind of maintenance?
Absolutely. The same way that, so it's a pillar of my health, and it's a lifestyle choice that I choose to make, and I have my patients choose to make as well.
So you have multiple pillars.
I do. Yeah. I mean, I think that to say that just coming in to get adjusted,
that won't do it either, right?
Well, it depends on the person. And it also,
so I can eat whatever I want and just come to you and then.
Absolutely.
I'll be okay.
I mean, I wouldn't recommend that at all. Yeah. I think that's where it also becomes a health coach because, there are a lot of things out there that are important to your overall lifestyle. And as a patient, you also have to make the decision to say, I want to do this and I want to be healthy and
make it a priority, right?
Absolutely. And I think that the problem nowadays is that people are told that they're sick and they can't get well. So for example, arthritis, right? I see arthritis all the time. But arthritis is a general term. It actually just means inflammation of the joint. But people will go to, and this is a huge part of the pain education process, is that people when they have considered failed treatments, their brain actually starts to own that condition. They start to say, nobody's going to get me better. And trust me, that's a good fight to have with somebody when I'm trying to help them and they're just telling me this is the area of complaint.
But could I do, if movement and balance are those elements of good health, I would imagine,
mm-hmm.
how about if I just start doing yoga?
Yeah, I mean, yoga is great as well. Yoga is just, again, it's I don't think that the two entities are separate. I think that yoga is a way to improve flexibility and mobility. But that doesn't mean that chiropractic care can't help you and actually help your performance. So, for example, if you have, you know, a part of the lower back that is restricted in movement, you're actually inhibiting how far you can go into your poses. And in some cases, if you actually have a decrease in the curve and then you go into maybe too much of an extension, bending back or too much forward, again, that's where people come to me and they say, I was doing this, and then all of a sudden my back just started hurting and I don't know why. Now, not to say that they injured it in that moment. Again, it's kind of that chronic buildup over time. So what I really try to do, and then the reason I'm so grateful to be here, is just an opportunity to talk to people and say, healthy kids make healthy adults. We need to start them young. I mean, I see kids as soon as, I actually had two pregnant patients the past 2 weeks. They both gave birth actually recently, and they're both coming in tomorrow with their kids to get them checked, because the birthing process is stressful. And you want to make sure from a functional standpoint, as the kids are growing up, they want proper motor development, both sides. They want to be able to look symmetrically. They want to be able to move their arms. They should be coached on how long they should be crawling for to develop brain development as well.
So now you work with patients of all ages, and then do you have a specialty? Like, do you work more with, you know, moms or fitness people or... accidents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So particularly I work with, I wouldn't say I have a particular specialty. I work with people in pain, but all types of pain, whether it's shoulder pain, neck pain, back pain. I also have a very unique, background in that neuroscience. So complex cases, stroke patients, ADHD in kids, also chronic digestive issues, especially balance. I don't know what it was this week, but I had a lot of people with really, really severe vertigo and balance issues. And sometimes that's a different approach. Again, it's what's called, what I learned from a patient the other day is GIGO. It's like garbage in, garbage out. It's right. Like a computer system. I never used that term, but I use the input to output system. So input is basically, you know, if you go to type in your keyboard, and you smash the keyboard to make a sentence, it's not going to make a sentence, right? So the main input that we use at the clinic is adjusting, making sure that the spine is moving the proper way so that the rest of the nervous system can get the proper input that it needs. In some cases, with more complex cases with people with balance issues, they need more sensory work, so you need to actually work on their sensation to the feet. So we'll kind of combine the two. We'll do a little sensation work, and then we'll also adjust their low back as well, because I know that the nerves that go to the feet are also dependent in the low back. So again, if they're having that motion restriction in the lumbar spine, which is the lower part of the back, and then they're also, it could potentially impede the way that they're feeling their feet as well.
Now, is there anything that a person can do without going to see you, like self-care at home? Like, can they buy a foam roller or can they do some exercises?
Not a chance. I'm just kidding. Yeah, so obviously, so there's two parts of it. I think that a pillar of health is mobility, which is, you know, again, getting adjusted and making sure that the joints are moving well. And also strength is a huge part of it, because what tends to happen is that after you get adjusted, you know, your body has these neural pathways that kind of bring your body back to the way that you were. So you have to retrain the strength patterns to help stabilize. So we definitely teach some foam rolling. I'm big into strength training and functional movement, you know, strengthening the muscles that surround the pelvis, the glutes, the lower back muscle that attaches to the rib cage. It's allergy season, so a lot of people have breathing mechanic issues. So they tend to do upper respiratory breathing into basically where your shoulders are, as opposed to the rest of the lung field. So, and again, it's pollen season, so a lot of inhalation, exhalation issues. So I see that a lot as well.
So now, if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
So lovethespine.com. You can also find me on Instagram. It's just Dr. Colton. And we're located in Alpharetta, Georgia. So Old Milton Parkway and Roswell Street, right next to Pura Taqueria. You can't miss us.
And then they can come in, and is the what's a visit look like, that first initial kind of consultation?
Yeah, so usually it's they say that the mystery is in the history. So when you come to me and we're talking and we're trying to figure out what's going on, I need to know everything that's ever happened to you, basically. And we talk through it. So that usually takes about 10 to 15 minutes for me to talk through your history. Based on what you're presenting with, you know, I build a custom tailored exam, which takes about 30 to 45 minutes. And then after that, we'll probably take some films of your spine and kind of tell you where you're at. Then the next visit, you know, that takes about an hour or so. Mm-hmm. Maybe some relief treatment if you're in an acute condition where you had a trauma or an injury. But then I need some time to kind of look at it. And I think that's kind of the missing key in health, is that we try to rush the condition. You come in with a low back pain, here's this or that. It's not that simple sometimes. So it has to be an individual approach to everybody.
And then so that first kind of consultation is more discovery, learn about you as a whole, and then work on whatever the specific situation is. And then once you kind of learn that, then you can create kind of a care plan.
Yeah, so then we'll make that recommendation of care. Mm-hmm. Again, I like to spend some time and really think about what's the best route. You know, sometimes people need more frequent care in the beginning, and then you kind of get into more of a corrective stage, right? Mm-hmm. My goal, if you're coming in with chronic pain, you know, how do I get you out of pain as fast as possible? And then we kind of tailor that. And a typical visit will usually last about 15 to 20 minutes. If it's more of one of those complex cases, I will spend an hour with somebody, because I'll really take the time to say, okay, there's a lot going on here. And it could be completely unrelated to their complaint.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, if somebody, again, the website is lovethespine.com, Dr. Ben Colton. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Yeah.
Thank you guys so much. It's a pleasure.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Sanjay Torre. We will see you next time on Office Evolution Radio.